This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of April 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 26th of April, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: War of Words After Surgery Sale Binned. Ram Raid Gang Admit Attacks, Including Tesco. And St Cross Plans Spark More Objections. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is A War of Words After Surgery Sale Binned. A war of words has broken out between two councillors after a deal to buy a significant city centre building was rejected. The Chronicle has learned that a bid by the City Council to purchase the St Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street was rejected by Cabinet members last month. That followed a discussion on the land transaction at a council meeting in February, in which opposition Liberal Democrat Council decided to take part. Now Liberal Democrat Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who owns the building and was seeking to sell it to the council, has accused the ruling Conservatives of being incapable of making sound decisions. He said, "I was not surprised when Cabinet reneged on the offer the council made in January. The Conservative administration is so driven by political self-interest that it is incapable of making sound decisions, even ones that are important for the city. The head of estates recommended the purchase of the St Clement's Surgery site because he appreciates its strategic importance for the regeneration of Silver Hill. Apart from averting a repeat of the Henderson scheme, the original Silver Hill scheme which collapsed, and ensuring that the practice wasn't evicted with nowhere to go, I bought the site to keep it within the council family rather than it being bought by a third-party developer. The site is central to Silver Hill's future, but we first need an administration that puts the interests of the city ahead of its own. Hopefully we will soon have one." However, Conservative councillor and the City Council's portfolio holder for finance, Guy Ashton, who is up against Councillor Gottlieb in the St Michael ward in next week's election, hit back. He said if he's so keen for the council to own the building, why did he buy it from under the council's nose in 2016? As previously reported, it is understood Councillor Gottlieb bought the St Clement's GP surgery when he was serving as a Conservative for £1.65 million, despite the council bidding for the site. Councillor Ashton added, "At the time, we didn't own the bus station, the Friarsgate surgery. We didn't have the supplementary planning document, SPD, in place. Our influence and control over the Saxon Gate area is wholly different to 2016. The importance of the property is much diminished." In his criticism of the Cabinet, Councillor Gottlieb said the rejection of the land transaction was as foolish as the recent decision not to purchase the Brooks. However, Councillor Ashton said the Brooks decision was around a decade ago. The war of words comes after the Chronicle revealed Councillor Gottlieb had been trying to sell the building to the council for more than £2 million, more than what he paid for it, after previously saying he bought it without any profit motive. Councillor Horrell said, "We did not need to purchase the surgery to make Saxon Gate work. This isn't a matter of incompetence. It is a matter of honesty and integrity. We could not put money in the pocket of a serving councillor. What would the public think if we did?"
Ram Raid Gang Admit Attacks, Including Tesco. A gang who organised a ram raid on Tesco in King's Worthy are awaiting sentencing. They pleaded guilty to masterminding 11 ram raids across Hampshire, Surrey and Sussex. Jimmy Shea, 24, of Nursery Road, Alton. Les Keat, 29, of Cobbett's Close, Normandy. Eric Summerfield, 63, of Walnut Tree Close, Guildford. Melvin Beach, 47, of Kingston Road, Leatherhead, and Jason Moby, 40, of MacDonald Road, Farnham, admitted their roles in the raids at Hove Crown Court last Wednesday. It relates to the spree of ATM thefts between May and December of last year, including ram raids at Tesco's Express in Springvale Road, Kingsworthy, Denmead, Alton, Borden, Farnham and East Horsley. Following the ATM thefts, police arrested six people in a series of coordinated early morning raids early on Thursday, December the 20th, involving 70 officers from across Surrey, Sussex and Hampshire. Head of Serious Organised Crime for Surrey and Sussex, Detective Superintendent Karen Mizzi, said, "The guilty pleas heard in court yesterday have been a result of a thorough investigation into organised crime in the area. I'm pleased that our team coordinated with Sussex and Hampshire forces. We were able to make the arrests. I want to reassure the public that we are taking these crimes very seriously and the perpetrators will never be welcome in Surrey. The raids are not being connected with the similar attacks at the petrol station at West Meon Hut and the attack at Lloyds Bank in Bishop's Waltham. The men have been remanded in custody until they attend Hove Crown Court for sentencing on June the 7th. And there are three pictures, all depicting the devastation caused by the diggers breaking in and taking the ATM machines."
Sencroft's plans spark more objections, and this article is accompanied by several photographs, one showing part of the Sencroft Park where the car park is proposed, a rather nice shot of the Hospital of Sencroft and the almshouses, and a shot showing the proposed entrance to the parking area. Objections are still pouring in to plans for a car park on a historic meadow on the edge of Winchester. The Hospital of St. Cross wants to build a 57-space car park on St. Cross Park, close to the medieval almshouses, and improve access for emergency vehicles. But, following the opposition last week, within a few days of the proposal becoming widely known, the hospital has temporarily withdrawn the plan to allow for a public consultation. In a letter to the Chronicle, the chairman of the trustees of the hospital, David Firebrace, said, "Many objectors were misinformed." He wrote, "The trustees of the Hospital St. Cross are very disappointed about the objections to the proposed development of a car park in the meadow next to the hospital buildings and church, especially as many of them are inaccurate. The trustees have therefore withdrawn the application so that there can be a full consultation with the local community, which I am confident will allay many of the fears before the application is remade." The number of formal objections has this week grown to 82. Juliet Dodson of Shawford Road, Shawford, wrote, "There are plenty of park and ride facilities available in Winchester, and there is no need to build more parking, especially so on the water meadows. This is a beautiful area and should remain such." Robert Rudd of Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, wrote, "Winchester City Council has placed certain restrictions on any development of Bushfield Camp. One of these restrictions is that any development must not encroach onto the east side of the site. This is specifically to protect the area and the surrounding area of St. Cross, the chapel and hospital, and also the view from St. Cross, which is classed as a very important Winchester vista and must be protected. To build a car park on the proposed site goes completely against the City Council's own planning rules and duty to protect such areas." Several objectors point out that the landscape was the inspiration of John Keats' poem, Ode to Autumn. The hospital says the car park would cater for the events that it hosts, such as weddings, memorial services, fetes and concerts. It proposes to put down a mesh that allows grass to grow through and can also support vehicles and stock-proof fencing. No tarmac is proposed.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. And then that'll be followed by announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Cutler, Anthony Raymond Cutler, on the 15th of April, aged 64. Hale, Raymond Frederick Hale, on the 13th of April, aged 74. Hayhurst, Rosemary Ann Hayhurst, on the 14th of April, aged 77. Tatnall, Annie Louisa Tatnall, who died peacefully at Valley Lodge Care Home, aged 90. And Tiller, Marina Tiller, on the 14th of April after a long illness, aged 94. And now we have Christian comment read by Andrew, please.
Rising Again. The ancient church dedicated to St. Ethelburga in Bishopsgate in London survived the Blitz with only minor damage. But on a Saturday in April 1993, a tipper truck drew up outside. At 9:17 p.m. a warning was telephoned. An hour later, a bomb made from a ton of fertilizer in the back of the truck exploded. A huge column of smoke rose above the city. 40 people were injured, one person was killed. The church was reduced to rubble. The bomb's target was the NatWest Tower, then Europe's tallest building. £350 million of damage was done, and the insurance payment for the tower nearly brought down the Lloyd's market. St. Ethelburga's was not insured. That area of the City of London is full of churches, so it must have been tempting to close the church and sell the site. But, like those who are already planning to repair Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris after the terrible fire, the Bishop of London, Richard Charteris, was determined that St. Ethelburga's would rise again. This was not to be the end of the story. Not for St. Ethelburga's, not for the city workers who had loved the building, and not for the nation. The body of the church, like the crucified body of Jesus, would be marked forever by what it had suffered. But it would rise to a new life, to show that God and his love were stronger than suffering, and stronger even than death. In 2002, St. Ethelburga's was reopened as a centre for reconciliation and peace. Our own professor, Simon Keyes, now a member of the University of Winchester Centre for Religion, Reconciliation and Peace, who spoke to us recently at St. Cross, was one of its early directors. Perhaps it's easy to see that a bomb church, if it rises again, needs to rise as a community of reconciliation. But all human communities are, in a way, bombed communities. And all people are bombed people. All of us in our lives know conflict and hurt and violent words and actions. All of us will have to grapple with death, others, and in the end, our own. That is why the cross is central to Christian faith. God himself knew conflict and hurt and violence and even death, and by sharing in these things transformed them. That is why St. Paul says he wants to share in Christ's suffering and death, so that he can share in Christ's resurrection in his transformation of death. That poses a challenge to each of us. We have each known conflict and hurt and violence. We have each experienced through these something of death. How will we rise from these experiences? Will we choose to be part of love's redeeming work and rise as agents of reconciliation? For that is what it means to share in Christ's resurrection. That is what it means to allow God to produce its fruits in our lives. That is what it means to live as an Easter people. And that was written by Reverend Philip Crinks, who's the priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in St. Cross, Winchester.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. And I think we've got a little start on St. Cross following the headline article. Nikki.
Indeed, we have. Some of it will be repeated from the previous thing. This from David Farbrace, headed St. Cross Car Park. Sir, the trustees of the Hospital of St. Cross were very disappointed about the objections to the proposed development of a car park in the meadow next to the hospital buildings and church, Chronicle, April 18, especially as many of them are inaccurate. The trustees have therefore withdrawn the application so that there can be a full consultation with the local community, which I am confident will allay many of the fears before the application is remade. The tragedy in Paris last week emphasises the danger of fire, so anything that improves access for emergency vehicles has to be an asset. Fire engines are just too big to get under the arch at the main entrance to the hospital. Access to the meadow via the proposed car park will allow them to get much nearer the church and brothers' quarters. The trustees love the hospital as much as the local residents and do not wish to do anything detrimental to such a special place. David Farbrace, Chairman of the Trustees, the Hospital of St. Cross and Almshouse of Noble Poverty, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
And this letter says, Sir, has anyone any idea how costly it is to maintain the historic buildings and land belonging to St. Cross Hospital? The fees visitors pay is a help in keeping all that we know and love. Most visitors come by car and parking is limited. People attending weddings and funerals have real difficulties and Mead Road becomes very congested. The proposed car park will be shielded by trees along St. Cross Road and well away from area people use for picnicking, which I may point out they do on private land. Perhaps I should come and have a picnic in their garden. I have never seen letters complaining about the caravans and motorhomes that are seen parked occasionally in the cricket field next door, so why all the fuss now about a few well-prepared parking spaces? Most historic buildings cater for tourists parking on their land, so why must St. Cross Hospital be different? And that's from Susan Fairbrother, Byron Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
And now for an alternative view. Sir, in your front page article about the proposal by the Hospital of St. Cross to create a car park on St. Cross Park, you quote a statement from the hospital in which it claims that, and I quote, there are relatively limited public transport services which provide regular, efficient services to St. Cross and no service connecting the park and ride. This is nonsense. The Blue Star No. 1 bus service operates every 15 minutes, Monday to Saturday, and every 30 minutes on Sundays, along the full length of St. Cross Road. The bus takes 10 or 11 minutes from the bus station to the Bell Inn, immediately adjacent to the Hospital of St. Cross. Moreover, the same bus service stops at the South Park and Ride on Otterbourne Road. The timetable indicates that it takes only a few minutes from the South Park and Ride to the Bell Inn. In addition, on Mondays to Saturdays, the Stagecoach Service 69 runs once an hour along St. Cross Road from and to the city centre. 5 buses an hour, 4 stopping at the South Park and Ride, is a first-class service, and in my experience, it is reliable. How much of the rest of the hospital's justification for its car park is as ill-judged as its spurious claims about public transport? And that's from Mr. Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And this from Tony Stevens, MILP, retired, headed Stealing Our Light. Sir, as a former principal public lighting engineer for Hampshire County Council, I mourn the loss of the all-night street lighting that Hampshire has enjoyed since street lighting became mainly a county council responsibility. There have been many changes to the operation of street lighting during the last decade, which has led to later switch-on times. Do you notice how dark it is now before the street lighting comes on? Earlier switch-off times, excessive dimming during the small hours, and finally, now, switching off during the small hours of this important public asset. Public lighting was introduced for the benefit of the public, to enable them to go about their work and play after the sun had set in relative safety. It has, over the years, encouraged the much-vaunted nighttime economy, whilst fulfilling its original primary role of reducing nighttime road accidents and latterly deterring nighttime crime, or at least enabling the police and others to witness what was happening from a distance. It also enabled individuals to consider the fight or flight issues that confront people out by themselves at night when being approached by a stranger. However, our political elite know better, and they have now determined that all night lighting should come to an end in specific areas of our community. Never mind the fact that the current PFI street lighting contract was only made cost-effective on the basis that 90% of the cost-benefit of the project was to be derived by the supposed savings to the public generated by the reduction in crime that would lead from improving street lighting across the county at that time. Where is the audit office when you really need them to stop such a scandalous waste of public money? I therefore demand that our political elite should stop short changing the residents of Hampshire from a safety as well as a financial point of view, and restore full-level nighttime public lighting across the board. That's Tony Stevens, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
Wasteful. Justin K. Chapel Lane, Otterbourne writes, "Sir, I wonder how many of your readers who are regular Waitrose customers are aware of the appalling waste being perpetrated by their sushi concession, Sushi Daily. Curious how little sushi their counters in the Winchester and Chandlersfield branches seem to sell, and noticing they never mark down the food towards the end of the day, I asked an employee what they do with it. 'We throw it away,' was the answer. When I asked one of the customer services managers at Waitrose Chandlersfield about this, she corroborated it, adding that Waitrose didn't approve, but there was nothing they could do because it is a concession. She says that every night their bins are full of fresh, unsold sushi. How can this be in any way acceptable? I, for one, will not be buying anything from Sushi Daily until this disgraceful, wasteful policy is changed, either by them giving away the food to the homeless and needy, at the very least marking it down. I would advise other Waitrose shoppers to do the same." And that, as I say, was from Justin Kay.
This is a letter from the Lib Dem candidate for St Barnabas Ward. Planning failure. "Sir, supporters of the box-ticking Conservative administration at Winchester City Council, as identified in the Chronicle, April 18, neatly sidestepped the continuing failure of the Winchester District local plan to deliver for Winchester Town. The absence of a strong local plan in areas like St. Barnabas Ward means that affordability for all types of housing, adequate infrastructure improvement, and protection of the green, semi-rural character of our neighbourhoods is being undermined by speculative development. Conservative councillors in Denmead will see this through a different lens. Denmead is the only parish in the district to have a neighbourhood plan, drawn up with the current district local plan at a cost to all taxpayers. So far, no other community in the Winchester district has been allocated the extra resources needed to develop their own plan. With the neighbourhood plan in place, Denmead benefits directly from 25% of the CIL collected, compared with 15% in other towns and parishes, which they can spend on local infrastructure improvement. Liberal Democrat proposals to raise the neighbourhood CIL to 25% for all parishes were blocked by Conservatives on the City Council. This is why making a formal neighbourhood plan for Winchester Town Council part of the next district local plan is a priority for me, and why I want to see a Liberal Democrat-led council leading this process from May." And that, as I said, comes from Mike Crask, Stony Lane Week, who is the Lib Dem candidate for St Barnabas Ward.
And this from Kate McIntosh, headed "Different Designs at Station." "Sir, only the exceptionally vigilant will have noticed that the perspective on the hoardings around the station approach site illustrates an earlier version of the development scheme and not the one on which the public were purportedly consulted. I say purportedly, since there has been absolutely no alteration made to the scheme as a result of that consultation, despite there having been a remarkable synergy of views opposed to the number of parking spaces on the site, so close to the busiest road junction in the city, and the car access coming off Gladstone Street, the failure to restore two-way traffic at Sussex Street, which would enhance the pedestrian experience between the station and West Gate, also the sheer bulk of the development, for which Winchester City Council have now submitted for outline consent to be granted by themselves. As Councillor Gottlieb has stated previously in your columns, the City Council behaves as though they had granted themselves impunity from any obligation to follow proper democratic procedures, performing only a transparently hollow sham of consultation with either the public or with those City Councillors representing the citizens of Winchester. And that's from Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Missed chance. Sir Councillor Ashton paints a very rosy picture of the new leisure centre, but misses the main concerns, Chronicle April 18th. The centre is smaller than the one the council voted for. Whilst he hides the figures behind a confidentiality, one must ask why. The fact is that although we have a smaller centre, the cost has increased by approximately 26%, which is a considerable amount. This reduces the potential visitor numbers, makes it less financially variable. More worryingly is the fact that one of the partners has reduced its contribution by £4 million, increasing the council's borrowing requirement by 52%, which is why it is unlikely to show a return for 40 years. What business would plan in this way? Then we have Councillor Brooke telling us what a good planning department we have. Yes, the strategic planning department that has looked after Winchester's interests with the well-thought-out plan. However, she fails to address any of the main points of concerns the residents have. In the last 8 years I have been on the council, I have never known such a high level of concern from residents, whether it's about planning permission or enforcement. Recently, we have seen a large number of staff leave the council. Many of these are long-term officers. Why are they suddenly leaving? This needs to be addressed to retain the experience within the organisation, and it is just not the planning department this affects. This high level of churn really affects the efficiency of the departments. No business would accept this level of staff turnover. The result is clear when we look at the way areas of Winchester have changed dramatically. Yes, we need more houses, and we really need houses that Winchester people can afford, so we need to plan and control better. Whilst it is also due in some parts to government legislation, we also need an MP to work for the people of the district. Does Winchester Council reflect Westminster, which is out of touch with the voters? And that's from Councillor Brian Lamming, Liberal Dem Councillor for Badgers Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, Wheatland Coast, Badgers Farm.
And this letter is from the Conservative candidate for St Luke Ward. It's titled Crisis Solutions. Sir, my recent letter in Chronicle, April 11, seems to have hit a nerve with some of your readers. Councillor Anne Weir asserts that she supported the Westman Road affordable council housing. Actually, she objected to it. The minutes of the planning meeting, 24th of August 2014, quote her as saying, "There was pressure in the area for parking. The improvements to the Taplins Road play area was not a full solution. Refusal of the application and retention of the open space was encouraged." Karen Barrett has also challenged me on my support for affordable housing. Interestingly, Miss Barrett was on the planning committee with me for the Barton Farm application. And when I spoke up for the 800 affordable homes, I looked across at Miss Barrett, hoping that she would at least speak out for that element of the proposals, even if she couldn't support the application. Sadly, she didn't. I was alone in arguing for more affordable housing in Winchester rather than Basingstoke, as Councillor Porter argued. For the record, I happen to be a long-standing director of the Winchester Housing Trust, a small, local, affordable housing provider, an unpaid role. I am a trustee of St. John's Winchester Charity, another affordable housing provider, unpaid, and I have worked closely with Footstep Living, yet another affordable housing provider, unpaid. Winchester desperately needs a lot more inclusive or affordable housing, and a second Barton Farm, i.e. 2,000 homes, built as a 21st century modern council estate may very well be the answer to Winchester's housing crisis. And that comes from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Week, and he's the Conservative candidate for the St. Luke ward.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. So now we're going to take a step back into history. Nikki.
100 years ago, Saturday, April the 26th, 1919. Twyford Women's Institute is an excellent illustration of how a branch of this popular national movement may be successfully and usefully run by the various classes of the community cooperating harmoniously and exercising a little tact and thought with a desire always to be actively beneficial. Twyford Women's Institute held its inaugural meeting in January 1918, and it is now a membership of between 70 and 80. Mrs. Wood of Twyford House is the president. And a second item. On Thursday evening, the parish of St. Bartholomew Hyde extended a hearty welcome home to the soldiers and sailors of the parish who had been demobilised. The social welcome in the parish hall was preceded by a thanksgiving service in the church, where there was a large congregation who joined heartily in the processional hymns.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, April the 26th, 1969, there are two items. Alderman Mrs. E. C. Neat spoke against the police intervention with the Winchester Youth Centre at a meeting of the City Council Libraries, Museum and Lands Committee on Monday, and said she was going to take the matter up personally with the police authorities. Mrs. Neat, who is the chairman of the committee, stated, "I feel very strongly at the police entering a youth club just because it's there. They have no right of entry and should only go in if they were invited or there's trouble." The subject arose when Councillor Mrs. Carpenter-Turner mentioned complaints by local people about noise from the centre, which is run by a group of young people in the former St. Mary's School. Mrs. Carpenter-Turner said she had been at the centre on one recent evening in the company of policemen on another matter not concerning the youth centre. While standing outside, she heard some of the noise and told Mrs. Neat the language coming out of the building was the sort we get passed up to us on a piece of paper when we're on the bench. And the second item is TB Designs, the structural steelwork and reinforced concrete design engineers, have moved their head office from the High Street in Winchester to a much larger and especially selected office in the Winnell Industrial Estate. Commenting on the firm's very considerable growth from small beginnings in 1964, Mr. Hugh Thomason, one of the partners in the company, paid tribute to the staff for the effort and teamwork that they have given, and he predicted continuing expansion, particularly when their new London office is opened later in the year. The fact that TB Designs have passed the £10,000 mark in contract value in the last 5 years indicate quite clearly that the confidence shown by both national and local clients.
And we have a couple of articles from 25 years ago, Friday, April the 22nd, 1994. Worried parents who are concerned about the standard of GCSE education at the Westgate School are demanding that further action be taken. Mothers who contacted the Hampshire Chronicle this week claimed their children had been taught by 17 different teachers at the Winchester School since the GCSE course started because their original teacher was unwell. The article in last week's paper entitled "Westgate Head Refutes Mother's Claim of Unsatisfactory Education" prompted more parents to write to the Chronicle to back up Janice Patterson's allegations. Mrs. Patterson of St. Martin's Close, Winchester, claimed her son and his class had undertaken hardly any work towards their imminent English exams due to start next month, that they had not covered poetry or Shakespeare, and were asked to review a book they had read over a year ago. Head teacher Peter Jenner refuted the allegations, stating that the facts were almost all totally untrue. On Wednesday, Mr. Jenner said it was not remotely true that 17 teachers had taken the class. The bulk of teaching has been provided by two established and experienced members of staff, with occasional lessons covered by a handful of other teachers. Work has been set on those occasions, he said. Mrs. Patterson said on Monday, "I've had numerous phone calls over the weekend from very supportive parents." The second article, memories of wartime days flooded back to a small group of people as they looked across the fields to the south of Marwell Zoological Park. Behind them was the massive bulk of a hangar, one of several which were built in the camouflage of woodland and which are still standing today. This quiet part of the countryside once hummed with the sound of Spitfires, Blenheims and Halifaxes. The visitors included former air transport auxiliary pilots, a former air training cadet, and a former flight engineer. They had been invited to spend a day at Marwell to retrace their steps and bring to life a part of Marwell's history. Also in the group was a former Royal Engineer who had assisted in the construction of one of the hangars. Air Transport Auxiliary was a group of pilots, mainly women, who ferried aircraft between factories and RAF bases all over Britain. At that time, Marwell Hall, at the centre of the Zoological Park, was owned by the managing director of Cunliffe Owen, who adapted planes for military use. When a dispersal field was required, away from the balloon defences of Eastleigh, it was decided to use the fields near the park for this purpose.
Thank you. Now we come back to the present time with the editorial comment, please, Nikki.
And this is headed, "The Council Election on a Knife Edge." This time next week, the polls will open and the City Council elections will be held. It may sound a cliché, but things do look too close to call. The Conservatives are defending a potentially vulnerable 10 seats, with the Lib Democrats defending 6. The makeup of the council is such that with the Tories on 23 seats and the Lib Dems on 22, the loss gain of one seat could see control switch. The Tories will highlight the progress made over Saxon Gate / Central Winchester Regeneration / Silver Hill 2, delete as appropriate, station approach and the sports centre at Bar End. The Lib Dems have voiced criticisms but have fundamentally agreed with the approach, the size of the sports centre notwithstanding. Idle cynics at their keyboards will make the usual boring criticisms of the way the council is run. But fortunately, in Winchester there exists a strong current of interest in local affairs and the world in general. The turnout will be well above the national average, and 700 people turned out on Easter Monday to march about the lack of action over tackling climate change.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And this is by Andrew Napier, and it's called "Shooting the Messenger." We are living in worrying times, and I'm not talking about Brexit, panto, fiasco, etc. Put aside the extraordinary goings on in Westminster, I want to focus on local newspapers and Winchester, the Hampshire Chronicle. The Hampshire Chronicle has been published every week since 1772, never missing an edition, and it has been a key part of local society ever since. All the chronicles are available in the Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Streets for anyone to have a look at free of charge. The paper is fundamentally the same, reporting what has been happening locally. For around 100 years, we've also carried national and international news before railways allowed the development of national newspapers in London. Since then, the paper has largely focused on the central Hampshire area. Go back to Victorian times and there are stories about local government, clubs, societies, charities, ideas and plans to change things, people getting into trouble, people being born, people dying, much the same as the paper today. It would be fair to say the paper has developed a reputation for being a reliable source of real, not fake, news. But in recent years, there's been a major change in how many people view the newspaper and its stories. Members of the public are now more likely to complain. Not at mistakes, such complaints are entirely reasonable, but they are angry that stories have appeared at all. There is a genuine dismay. Why is my planning application in the paper? Why is the fire in my house in the paper? Why is my court case in the paper? What business is it of anyone else's? The Chronicle receives threats of legal action over reporting the City Council Planning Committee, items in the public domain and for which there is a clear and obvious public interest. People whose homes have been saved by firefighters express outrage about the report because they did not give permission for anything to be written, and burglars might tip off that their place might be empty. For the record, there has never been such a burglary, and the last I heard, firefighters were still paid for by the council taxpayers. People convicted of criminal offences are angry because other people will know where they live. A common underlying theme is emerging. It's all about me and being unable to see the bigger picture. The complainants generally don't understand why they should be featured. This explosion in self-righteousness is not new, but the internet has made it worse. Social media, Facebook, Twitter, means that more people read the Chronicle journalism than ever before. Perhaps the underlying reason for this public anger is that technology has allowed everyone to be a publisher in the sense of telling everyone what they're up to. Excuse me. Over the last 20 years, they have got used to being in control of the message about themselves, yet at the same time, in a kind of mental disconnection, they are furious that the free speech that they enjoy might result in the Chronicle reporting things. It is okay for them to tell the world, but the moment someone else does, they don't like it. Some readers may think, oh dear, hard luck, you're journalists, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, etc. Yes, that is true, but this is actually quite dangerous. It will have a wider impact. Many people are beginning to forget about what it means to be part of a local community, both the benefits and the responsibilities. The British have a heightened sense of privacy compared to other cultures. However, perhaps we are getting close to where this sense is actually harming the free flow of information that is the lifeblood of civil society and democracy. Privacy is obviously important, but taken too far, it leads to all sorts of issues. Perhaps schools should spend longer on teaching about the civil society and, yes, the importance of a free press.
Andrew, now you've got some news from Belgar and the Alternative Look.
Yes, and this article is accompanied by some fabulous photographs of some peregrines. The Falcons have been named in the public poll. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrines have been named. Winchester Cathedral recently asked their team of 800 volunteers to suggest names for the peregrines, which had become a familiar sight in the cathedral close after making Winchester Cathedral their home for the third year in a row. Over 100 names were suggested, ranging from people connected with the cathedral's history, such as St. Swithin and Emma, to more regular names, including Poppy and Percy. All the names were given to the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, who chose her favourite four names before the general public were asked to vote for the winning pair on Facebook. Out of 541 votes cast, and I rather like this, Winnie and Chester topped the poll with 81% of the vote, which I agree with. To follow the progress of Winnie and Chester, you can do so by viewing the live webcam on the cathedral website. The pair have recently laid 4 eggs, and it is hoped that their chicks will hatch within the next couple of months. The webcam will also help the Hampshire Ornithological Society track the behaviour of the peregrines and enable the public to engage with the peregrines without interfering with their vital breeding process. Keith Betton, who's chairman of the HOS, said, "It is so good to be able to watch these majestic birds at close range and to marvel at their ability to fly so fast. They have had a tough time in the past, and now it is time to help them. It is great to be working with the cathedral staff to help these birds."
Thank you. Now this week's announcements. We start with what's on. Firstly, at the Theatre Royal Winchester on Friday the 3rd of May, there's an interesting and improvised murder mystery called Murder She Didn't Write. On each night of this performance, it's only one night in Winchester, but it's travelling around. On each night, a brand new murder mystery is performed after asking the audience for suggestions on how the show could go. Unplanned, unscripted, promises to rate plenty of laughs for the audience. More information on that from the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. There's a concert by the Winchester Fusion Choir on Saturday the 11th of May at 7:30 p.m. And that's under the direction of Murray O'Brien. And it's at St. Stephen's Church in Oliver's Battery at 7:30, Saturday the 11th of May. And it's a concert in aid of Winchester Parkinson's. Tickets are £6.50 on the door. There's also a long-running and popular series of theological talks returns to Winchester next week. Space in the City focuses on reflecting the Lord's Prayer with Brian Pickett, Angela Tilby, Peter Lippiatt and Elizabeth Stewart. They're on Wednesday lunchtimes from 12:30 till 1 at St. Lawrence in the Square, and that's on May the 1st, 8th, 15th and 22nd. And lastly, at the Chesil Theatre from the 18th of May to the 25th of May, The Children is being performed. It's by Lucy Kirkwood and has the story around two scientists who move to an isolated cottage, but an old friend turns up. Why has she come? Interesting mystery, and you can get tickets or more information on 07527 471539. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 26th of April at 5:48 a.m. and begins at 8:19 p.m. And on Wednesday the 1st of May it ends at 5:39 a.m. and begins at 8:27 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. Further items of general news, Nikki.
And this headed, Marchers Demand Action on Climate. Friends of the Earth march in Winchester. Protesters in Winchester march through the city to voice their concerns over the future of the planet. The march on Easter Monday started at the Discovery Centre on Drury Street and finished by the Winchester Guildhall. It was organised by Winchester Friends of the Earth, FOE, in response to the recent protests by students asking for action on climate change. Gemma Barter, coordinator for Winchester FOE, said, "We think at least 300 people came along, and it was a much bigger turnout than we thought. The students were really good, and there was a lot of shouting." Several City Council candidates attended the march. Patrick Davis, Labour candidate for St Luke Ward, said, "It is great to see so many young people helping to lead the march today. We must do so much more locally and nationally. I've supported stronger environmental measures and policies through my years as a city councillor and will continue to push for bold action from the council." Lib Dem candidates said putting action on climate change at the heart of everything the council does will be a top priority if they win control of the council on May the 2nd. Lucille Thompson, leader of the Lib Dem group, said, "We fully support the FOE Climate Action Campaign and have set ourselves the very challenging goal of making the City Council carbon neutral by 2024. It means every penny the council spends on new facilities and services will have to show a climate dividend, she said. But the facts are clear. Climate change will have a devastating impact on the planet and humanity if organisations like the City Council don't now take the lead. And there are 8 photographs, all very colourful. It was a beautiful sunny day. Many of them pretty young, but actually not all. And some of the posters they were carrying were headed, one was, "Wake up, the house is on fire." And then there's one with a picture of David Attenborough headed, "Listen to David." And showing them crowding down the pedestrianised bit below the Buttercross, absolutely rammed with people and all the stalls. I don't know how anyone managed to get anything done that day. And the next sign which said, "Earth matters." And there's a couple of young girls obviously banging away on plastic bottles, and the heading is "Banging on about plastic." And then all the marchers assemble outside the Guildhall, and there are banners, and they march up onto the steps with all their banners. And that is about it. Obviously a successful event.
4 generations at Winchester Stonemasons Centenary. Bright and young at heart, Peter Weeble has a legacy on the parapet of Romsey Abbey. In the late 1960s, fellow stonemason Harry Burt surreptitiously sculpted a portrait of his boss, Mr. F.L. Pete Weeble, Vokes and Beck Monumental Masons, when replacing the corbel on the ancient building. Peter, who has celebrated his 100th birthday, was recently given a surprise party organised by Sheila Phillips and the members of South Wanston Senior Club. The party was attended by 4 generations of the family, the youngest of whom is Eva, aged 5 months. Winchester Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson came along for the afternoon and presented Peter with a bottle of champagne donated by Waitrose to mark the occasion. Peter was surrounded by his family, friends and many centenary cards, including one from the Queen, and a special birthday cake. A talented poet, Peter also entertained his friends with an impromptu rendering of one of his poems to round off an enjoyable and memorable celebration. And there's a lovely picture of them all. Kevin, Sarah, with Eva, Peter, Trevor and Dominique, all surrounded, and he's holding his card with the picture of the Queen on the front. And the little baby is looking at it as enough to say, "I want to get hold of that and suck it."
A letter from the doomed Titanic. A letter written on board the doomed Titanic by a steward who died in the disaster is to be sold at auction. Richard Geddes penned the letter to his wife days before the liner struck an iceberg on April 14, 1912. He was one of more than 1,500 passengers and crew who died. His letter, written on Titanic stationery, describes how the Titanic previously suffered a near miss. It was sent to his wife in Southampton in a White Star Line envelope. Auctioneers estimate that the letter will fetch up to £18,000 when it is sold in Devizes, Wiltshire, on April the 27th. This lot is sold with the original certified extract relating to the death of a seaman, giving official confirmation of his death in the Titanic disaster, plus copies of photographs of Mr. Geddes and his wife, auctioneer Andrew Aldridge said. It's an exceptional letter on many levels. First and foremost, it was written on board the Titanic. It has its envelope, and the lot also contains official paperwork relating to Mr. Geddes. And finally, the content is superb, describing the near miss that Titanic nearly suffered that would have changed history. Part of the letter reads, "My dearest Sal, we got away yesterday after a lot of trouble. As we were passing the New York and Oceanic, the New York broke her ropes and very nearly ran into us, but we just happened to avoid a collision. I could see visions of Belfast. It must have been a trying time for the captain." Mr. Geddes told his wife he believed the Titanic would be a great deal better and steadier than other ships. "If we get in on time on Wednesday and there happens to be a boat, I will write from New York," he wrote. He signed it with fondest love and kisses to my dear wife and kiddies. And the article is accompanied by an extract of the certified notice of death of the seaman, and a copy or a photograph of the envelope addressed to his wife, which was written aboard the doomed Titanic, who perished in the disaster.
Uni dropout faces jail for knife attack. A Winchester University dropout has been found guilty of a knife attack on four police officers, which was caught on CCTV footage. Alex Trekov, 20, used the alias Solomon when he rang 999 to report a fight in a house in Islington, North London, on the evening of October the 6th last year. He then lay in wait with a large kitchen knife hidden behind his back in the hallway of his friend's flat. The Old Bailey heard that within 3 minutes, four police constables arrived on the doorstep, completely unprepared for the extreme violence about to be unleashed on them. Trekov was cleared of attempted murder, but convicted on three counts of wounding with intent and a fourth charge of attempted wounding with intent. The jury deliberated for 8 hours to reach verdicts by a majority of 10-2. Prosecutor Duncan Atkinson QC had told jurors, without hesitation or warning, and certainly without the slightest provocation from the officers, he raised his right hand and proceeded to attack the officers. Trekov brought the blade down on the head of PC Istalin Said Ali, 31, cutting her hand as she warded off a second blow. He lunged at PC Raphael Kedziora, 34, cutting his face and slashing the back of his neck. He went on to attack PC Ben Thompson, 40, before he was finally brought down by PC Lorna Watkins, 39, who tasered him twice. PC Said Ali told jurors that Trekov was emotionless in the moments before he produced the blade. She said, as soon as I said he's definitely got something in his hand, he launched towards me with a raised hand, a knife in his hand. At the time, I did not see a knife, but I saw a metal glint and I automatically knew it could only be a knife. I tried to protect myself, so naturally I raised my arms. He tried to attack me with the knife. He made contact, hitting my middle finger and also to the back of my head. I had gone backwards down the stairs. We all fell on top of each other. Giving evidence at the Old Bailey, Trekov, who lived with his estate agent mother in Redhill, Surrey, accepted he had injured the officers, but denied he meant them serious harm. The former Winchester University history student said he was so high on strong cannabis he was not thinking straight. He claimed he had called 999 to play a prank on his friend, then forgotten all about it and made crumpets with jam. The jury deliberated for 8 hours to reach its verdicts by a majority of 10-2. The four injured police officers sat together wearing their dress uniforms as they were delivered. Trekov, who made no reaction, was remanded into custody. Judge Wendy Joseph QC said Trekov faced a substantial prison term when sentenced on May the 10th.
Climate Call. Climate change charity WinACC, Winchester Action on Climate Change, is asking local voters to press candidates in the local elections on May the 2nd to commit themselves to take firm action in response to the climate emergency. Jock MacDonald, its new chairman, said, "Last year, UK government statistics showed around three quarters of people were concerned about climate change. Now, in 2019, even more of us, including our young people, are concerned. The Earth Day march on Easter Monday shows that we need to act together to prevent a looming global crisis. We must do much more and do it more quickly." Mr. MacDonald added, "Climate change is too important to be part of a political issue. It is essential that everyone who is elected in the City Council signs up to an action plan to cut the energy we use in the district, to cut the greenhouse gases we allow to pollute our atmosphere and to increase the amount of renewable power we generate. WinACC is developing its own plan, which in due course it will share with the leaders of the new council. Its ideas are set out in a leaflet which will be taken to the streets of Winchester. Top of WinAC's list is to clean up road transport, which produces just over half the district's greenhouse gas emission. The new movement strategy is a good start," said Sue Turner, chairman of WinACC's Built Environment and Transport Action Group. "We now need to the council to turn the strategy into action.
Water firms' investment in solar energy. A Hampshire natural mineral water company has backed its commitment to sustainability by installing more than 900 solar PV panels on the roof of its site in the Test Valley. Hilden Natural Mineral Water, based in Broughton, aims to be seen as one of the most sustainable and environmentally friendly natural mineral water companies in the UK, and has invested in the technology to help make that a reality. The 908 solar panels on its roof, which will harness enough energy to power 56 four-bedroomed homes, will cut the company's carbon footprint by more than 50,000 kilograms a year. Hilden is very conscious of its commitment to the environment, said Executive Director Debbie Jones. Our business is based in a beautiful 180-acre countryside setting, and we believe we have a responsibility to protect that same environment, both now and for the future. With strong environmental values embedded in our DNA, installing solar panels is a natural progression for Hilden, because it complements our sustainability strategy by reducing our carbon footprint and resource use. The roof-mounted scheme will deliver enough power to reduce the company's annual electricity demand by 27% and cutting bills by a quarter. It will generate almost 225,000 kilowatt-hours of electricity a year. Our business is based in a beautiful setting, and we believe we have a responsibility to protect that same environment, said Debbie. Our environmental strategy contains a commitment to reducing the consumption of energy on site, and this is a big step in that direction. Sean Beattie added, despite changes in government subsidy, the scheme will still pay for itself in less than 8 years, and since it is guaranteed to perform for at least 25, that means 17 years of free, low-carbon electricity. And so accompanied by a photograph of Sean Beattie and Debbie Jones holding bottles of the Hilden natural water at their location.
MP enters college funding debate. Winchester's MP has taken part in a debate on further education FE funding following a visit to Peter Simmons College. Steve Bryan met up with Peter Simmons' principal, Sarah Russell, and heard some of the issues it faces due to increased costs without any increase to the base rate of funding in recent years. Then speaking in the debate, Mr. Bryan explained that Peter Simmons is the largest college in England, and while having grown significantly in student numbers by 19% between 2011 and 2018, their overall funding grew by just 3% during the same period. He told MPs, the rising cost base, changes to pension contribution, national insurance, and the part-funded pay rise leads to a situation where without a long overdue increase in the base rate, they're going to have to make some very difficult and significant changes. This year's comprehensive spending review looks like a seminal moment for the sector. After the debate, Mr. Bryan confirmed his ongoing discussions with ministers and his continued support for the Raise the Rate campaign, which is seeking a significant increase in the funding rate for sixth form students.
Man jailed for 2,000 phone calls to police. A Winchester man has been jailed after dialing 999 and abusing call handlers for over 2,000 calls. Anthony Walters, 55, of St John's Road, was jailed for 10 weeks by magistrates. They also imposed a criminal behaviour order, CBO, on him, which will last for 5 years and prohibits him from calling the police or other emergency service unless it is in an emergency. Evidence used to support the CBO application included some 49 hours of calls he made to 101 and 999 in a 12-month period from November the 1st, 2017. A spokesman for Hampshire Police said the hours were spread across more than 50 hours. Sergeant Ed Hurst from Winchester Neighbourhood Policing Team, based at Mottisfont Court, said Anthony Waters now has a CBO imposed against him by the courts for his flagrant disregard of the 999 emergency number. His persistence in continually abusing this service and verbally abusing our staff has seen him rightly punished. We take this type of offence extremely seriously, and I hope this is a stark reminder to those who seek to misuse 999 and the 101 that there will be serious consequences to their actions. The court heard that Waters' offence was aggravated by his record of previous offending. At a previous trial, he had been found guilty of persistently making use of the public communications network to cause annoyance and inconvenience or anxiety. During the calls, Water used aggressive and abusive language, and they are not related to any ongoing emergency. Sergeant Hurst added, "What might seem like a joke to some people can have serious impact on the ability of emergency services to help those who are genuinely in need. The more time that is spent with our call handlers dealing with hoaxes, pranks and abusive phone calls means that people trying to report an ongoing crime or a medical emergency are less likely to have their voices heard."
Anger over refusal of Valley Hobbit homes. A developer has hit out after plans for environmentally friendly Hobbit-style homes were refused by planning inspectors. The unique design used a building technique known as earth sheltering, where homes are sunk into the land and then covered by soil, similar to that lived in by Bilbo Baggins and his kind from The Hobbit. This type of construction allows the earth to insulate the home, making it a fossil fuel-free, low-carbon and greener alternative to standard insulation. Planning Inspector Robert Fallon said the application put forward by Michael Wigley and John Glasspool would cause, quote, "significant harm to the landscape character and appearance of the area." In response, Mr. Wigley said, "The process of trying to make our vision of zero carbon living happen in Romsey has taken us 6 years and the price of an expensive car each. There is a hard limit to what individuals can afford to do with planning. These houses being built in Tess Valley are carbon positive. They generate carbon, meaning they actually make it harder for the UK to meet the requirements of the Climate Change Act. Last week's David Attenborough documentary, Climate Change, The Facts, told us that, if anything, the situation is far worse than we thought. Mr. Wigley confirmed that they will not appeal the decision. The Portress and Richardson Architects' designed plans included 3 single-storey, 4-bedroom homes on the site, which is north of Stockbridge Road, Timsbury. Inspector Robert Fallon said, "I recognise that the appellant's landscape visual impact assessment shows that long and medium views to the site would be effectively screened by intervening tree and hedgerow covers and the undulating landform." And this is accompanied by, an architect's sketch showing the houses built into the land in exactly as it describes, which is very much like the Hobbit homes of Bilbo Baggins.
Road safety fears over the new KFC. Would my friend still be alive today if the road wasn't gridlocked? That was the question put to civic chiefs by Whiteley resident Wendy Blackwell as they discussed plans for a drive-through KFC, just for information, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Mrs. Blackwell fears proposals by the fast food giant for land off Solent Way will make local roads even more congested. Her friend, named only as Stan, died in Whiteley after an ambulance was unable to get to his home because of heavy traffic. She told the City Council Planning Committee, "At least 650 residents are behind what I'm saying today. It is our human right to prevent incidental and accidental death. Enough is enough. Who else has to die before officers see what is staring them in the face?" The plans were rejected 6-2 when Councillor Eileen Berry abstaining after the committee heard of further traffic problems caused by current work on the M27. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "Surely this KFC would create the perfect storm of traffic chaos. The timing with the highway situation is alarming, to say the least. Presenting officer Robert Green told the committee that a traffic management plan has been developed which would allow the projects to work alongside each other. But Councillor Berry raised concerns over the new Lidl store that was opened in January on the same patch of land. She said wherever Lidl shops open, there is a tremendous influx of traffic. With this KFC, the M27 works, and everything else to consider, it would be an incredibly busy area. Other questions focused on how fast food restaurants can increase littering. Councillor David McLean said, "Litter is a big issue for me. I get the idea that people munch their chicken and dump the rubbish out the window. What protection could be offered to protect the area against that?" Councillor Rutter told the committee, "I understand it will create jobs, but they will be low wage and part-time. We want well-paid, full-time contracts. Otherwise, it's not helping the local community." Mr Green said that action group Whiteley Residents Matter had submitted a petition to the City Council demanding no further development in Whiteley.
Sun shines upon Town Heritage Day. Horsford looked both backwards and across the Channel on Easter Saturday. The Town Trust oversaw a feast of heritage while a traditional French market brought Gallic wares including cheese, fresh bread and records. The unique annual event was organised by Horsford Town Trustee Pam Stevens as part of the Open Day programme. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Bryan dropped in to meet the traders before walking down the hill to officially open the new museum at the old fire station. Mr Bryan said, "The new museum is small but beautifully presented. It's long overdue, and along with the stunning old Tichborne fire engine built in 1893, is really worth a visit. The French market was great and brought something different to the town." Robin Aitkins, chairman of the trustees, praised the volunteers and Roy Gentry and his museum committee. And there's some six photographs. One of the eel house, which looks really intriguing. And there's another one of the old steam fire engine, which looks amazing. And then there's a group of traders, really. And the French chaps are wearing berries, red berries, and they look all very happy. And it looks very sunshiny and beautiful. And there's a group of people with Steve Bryan at the opening of the old fire station on Broad Street.
The mayor has unveiled a new defibrillator. The mayor was on hand to unveil a new public access defibrillator, a PAD, at the city's St John's Ambulance Unit. Councillor Frank Pearson joined the Worthy Lane unit's volunteers at a ceremony to mark the installation of the new life-saving equipment. Afterwards, around 20 members of the public were taught to use the defibrillator and how to perform CPR in a two-hour session. Robert Hamm, St John's Ambulance Winchester unit manager, said, "We were very pleased to offer our support to the local community, and we're delighted to see so many people come along to learn how to use this new equipment. Many of our guests felt quite unsure at first, but with the guidance given by our volunteers, they soon overcame their fears and had a go using our training defibrillators. They went away with a great sense of achievement and the skills required to use the defibrillator if needed, boosting our community's resilience should an emergency arise." The defibrillator was purchased with funds raised by the Tesco's Bags of Help community grant scheme. Shoppers voted for the Winchester project they wanted to happen in July and August last year, and the public access defibrillator scheme was awarded £2,000. St John will continue to hold free demonstrations on the last Wednesday of every month from 7:30 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the mayor unveiling the new defibrillator, which is a subject that I'm personally very interested in because we are considering installing one at the Memorial Pavilion in Compton and Shawford.
Uni lecturers to ballot. Lecturers at Winchester University are voting on whether to strike after jobs were put at risk last month. The University and College Union, UCU, confirmed this week that its members at Winchester University are being balloted for strike action. As previously reported, a spokesman for Winchester University last month said 118 members of academic staff have been invited to consider voluntary severance, although the spokesman added the university is looking to cut between 30 and 40 full-time equivalent posts. Since then, the union said it received a letter from the university setting out plans for 55 job losses, 48 of which were classed as academic and research posts. According to the union, the reason behind the decision was the university was facing a serious financial challenge, arising mainly from the unexpected large increase in employer contributions to the teachers' pension scheme. UCU Acting General Secretary Paul Cottrell said, "Winchester University faces strike action if it refuses to rule out compulsory redundancies. There is no need for this knee-jerk reaction to change to pension costs, and this strike ballot should act as a warning to other universities tempted to use the changes to axe jobs. Universities need to work with us to get the government to fund pensions for university staff, not put staff jobs or opportunities for students at risk." The news comes after around 100 students staged a protest at the university's Sparkford Road campus in March over the planned cuts, which have been branded unjust. The protest was organised by third-year drama student Lottie Dean-Clist, who said, "The way the redundancies have only just been announced made it more of a shock for all of us. It seems like the whole thing was covered up and silenced before this." After the news escaped, tensions rose, and it's been affecting learning since. "It just feels like it's opened a new world of stress. I've always been taught to use my art training as a transformation tool, so making my own demo felt right. Around 100 people turned up and it felt fantastic. I'd imagine everyone else is very upset." Another student, Samuel Morton, said the cuts would have a profound impact on the quality of teaching for current and future students. He added, "We believe that these cuts are unjust and that the manner with which they are being executed lacks transparency. Many people have been left in the dark about whether their jobs / livelihood are at stake, having received very little in the way of correspondence from the university." This week, a spokesman for the university said, "Like many other institutions within the higher education sector, the University of Winchester is looking to rebalance its portfolio and associated staffing and resources. This comes at a time when the university and the sector as a whole are facing financial challenges. Unlike many other universities to date, we have held off having to rely on redundancies to balance budgets. In early March, we put in place a voluntary severance scheme with a view to reducing between 30 to 40 full-time equivalent posts. 118 academic staff from across the institution have been invited to consider voluntary severance. We remain hopeful that we will secure the required savings through voluntary means and should be in a position to confirm this by the end of April." With regard to the UCU ballot, the university respects the right of all trade union members to take part in peaceful industrial action. "We hope that support for students and key university activities will be a consideration for members when deciding whether to participate."
New gambling support service. Citizens Advice Hampshire is rolling out a new project across the South East that will help to spot the signs of gambling-related harm early. The Gambling Support Service, which takes a public health approach to the problem, is one of 12 across the country funded by £1.5 million, a two-year partnership with Gamble Aware. The service will go out across Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Surrey, West Sussex and East Sussex and Kent to raise awareness of the gambling-related harm. It will also train frontline staff of other organisations such as councils so they too can help people get support and advice they need. A dedicated trainer will teach frontline staff how to identify anyone at risk of gambling-related harm and support them with the knock-on effects it can have, such as debt, work and housing problems. They'll learn how gambling has changed, who's more at risk of gambling-related harm, and how to spot the signs and symptoms. They will be able to offer advice and information and know how to refer people to specialist support. People with gambling-related harm are more likely to seek help for problems such as debt than they are for gambling, which puts the advisers at a unique position to tackle root causes early. Paul Bright, Chief Executive of Citizens Advice Hampshire, said, "Problem gambling can set off a chain reaction of issues and lead to debt, eviction, mental health problems and relationship breakdown. It not only spells out trouble for those gambling, but for their families and friends and colleagues as well. This service means our frontline advisors can develop and share the skills necessary to spot signs of problem gambling early and to prevent the knock-on problems getting worse. Gamble Aware Partnerships funding comes after a successful pilot at the charity ran with the local Citizens Advice in Wales. Kate Fry, who ran the project at Citizens Advice Newport and is now overseeing the rolling out across England and Wales, said, "In 2 years, we trained more than 2,000 advisers and volunteers to recognise gambling issues and to help people overcome them. I'm delighted with the success of our project and can now grow across the country so we can reach more people who may be at risk of gambling-related harm."
And this article raises an interesting question. It's headlined, "Should we all be thinking about an Extinction Rebellion this spring?" Most of us had a much-needed break over Easter, but several hundred Hampshire residents joined thousands in London to protest at the pace of change over the climate. Several people I know replaced Sunday lunch at home for sandwiches on the street in Marble Arch, and quite a few spent the holiday in a prison cell. So, should we be supporting this type of direct action? And with the local elections coming up, should climate impact the way we vote? Extinction Rebellion is nothing new. For the last few centuries, the UK has numerous examples of both successful and unsuccessful popular revolts against the politics of the day. From the suffragette movement through to the anti-slavery campaign, people have taken to the streets and to the election booths to demand change. Climate change is undoubtedly the most pressing crisis facing the planet. And after one of the warmest Aprils on record in Hampshire, we are reminded that global politics has a direct and substantial impact on our county. The water we drink, the food we eat, the flowers we see in spring, the insects that pollinate our fruit, are all impacted by the changing climate. When both the anti-slavery movement and suffragette movement addressed massive injustice, today we face some of the most momentous decisions the globe has faced since the start of the Second World War. In short, if we don't rapidly change the direction of travel, we'll be seeing far more than a bit of extra warmth in June or a few boatloads of migrants in August. And increasing numbers of hungry and thirsty people seek new places in which to survive as their own countries become uninhabitable, we'll be faced with some desperate decisions about our own way of life, our own ability to survive in a world where climate change will steadily throw the normal rules out of the window. So, what about Extinction Rebellion? I suspect, like many movements, it is unlikely to still be there in a few years. At the rate they are going, most of our active members might be behind bars. But what it has already achieved is a renewed conversation on the street, in the coffee shop, even whilst watching birds at some of the Hampshire nature reserves this week. At long last, we are as a county talking about climate and what we can do to address the crisis we face. So, to the local elections, and here each of us has a chance to vote on what really matters. And I would argue that in addition to education, waste, healthcare, and transport, we should all be voting on climate. If your MP has a radical and creative approach to tackling climate change, then that is a good reason to vote for them. If, on the other hand, they have no interest, no fresh ideas, no determination to drive through new policy, then I would see that as a very good reason to vote for someone else.
Police give warning after break-in. Hampshire Constabulary is warning residents of Chandler's Ford to be vigilant following a recent burglary. On Friday, April 19th, between 4:45pm and 5:20pm, an unknown individual gained access to a property on Salcombe Close via an unlocked conservatory door. Electrical items and money were stolen. In order to prevent crime, the police is urging people to lock windows and doors when left unattended. Use timer switches to make properties look occupied. They advise that residents keep valuables out of view from windows and report any suspicious behaviour to the police. The police are asking anyone with information to call 101 or to call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Landlord left utterly confused after bin is taken. A Winchester landlord has been left utterly confused after having a bin taken from his pub. Andrew Hoggart of the Roebuck in Stockbridge Road watched through a window as the Biffer workers took the container without returning it. This comes only a week after a local resident released CCTV footage of a Biffer bin man throwing away his wheelie bin. Mr. Hoggart said, "Well, when I saw them taking it, I ran out there and asked what was going on. They told me I hadn't completed an EPA form and that they were taking the bin. If I hadn't seen them, I would have thought it'd been nicked like the poor bloke did last week. I knew for a fact that I'd sent the form, so I went back inside and rang up Biffer and told them, and they said they had no notification of me returning the form and instead asked me when the bin had last been serviced." He added, "At this point, I knew they didn't really know why the bin was taken, because they also told me they had no record of any collection from my pub since September last year." Biffer is responsible for the waste service on behalf of Winchester City Council. The bin has since been returned to the pub, but Mr. Hoggart claims he was not notified and that he only realised when he walked past it. He said, "On a more serious note, we obviously need a bin because we're a pub. We should have had a better explanation. And I'm sure it's exactly the same bin they've returned. It hasn't even been cleaned or serviced. And it didn't even come back empty." Last week, Michael Druitt, 58, of Tapling Road in Wick, shared footage of a Biffer man, bin man collecting his bin before loading it onto the back of the truck to empty. Once back on the ground, the binman picked it up and had thrown it back into the back of the truck. He said the full CCTV footage clearly shows that the operator did not inspect the bin for any faults and just decided to throw the bin back on the truck. How many other residents have suffered the same fate from Biffer operators? Speaking at the time, Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for an environment, said, "We will be undertaking a procurement process where we will be looking at an 8-year fixed price agreement with a provider and the best deal for taxpayers." Biffer was asked to make a comment about the latest incident.
And here we've got an out-of-this-world lecture for Simmons students. Students at Peter Simmons College were given an out-of-this-world lecture when visited by astrophysicist Dr. J.D. Jones. Dr. Jones, outreach leader in astronomy at the University of Southampton, visited Peter Simmons to talk about her experiences in the field of astrophysics and, in particular, her research into black holes. Dr. Jones completed a master's degree in astrophysics at Cardiff University before graduating with a PhD in radio astronomy from the University of Southampton in July 2012. She visited Simmons to deliver a talk to a packed lecture theatre on her research into an active supermassive black hole at the centre of the galaxy NGC 4051, followed by a question and answer session. Following the talk, one student said, It was highly inspiring and fascinating. It's just a small snippet, but it's pushed me further in the direction I'd like to take and helped to maintain my interest. Dr. Jones added, "Black holes and astronomy are interesting areas and a good place to start to get people interested. Currently, only 20% of physics undergraduates are female, so talks like this are a great way to promote the subject." And the article is accompanied by a picture of Dr. Sadie Jones with students from Peter Simmons College. And pleasingly, about half of the students are, in fact, female, which is good news.
Thank you. Nice to end on a happy note. So that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.